Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War.
And we're going to come clean. We had a guest, but through some foul up somewhere, no doubt my fault, we don't have that guest. And so we sit here, Scott and I, at a table with our gear spread out, and we have some time invested in setting gear out. We thought, we can't let
when
this...
You mean gear, you don't mean running gear, you mean our audio engineered room.
Hey, well, speaking of audio engineered room, would you say that we're a minimalist audio group, or do we have the full pack on with cotton sweats on as we're out on the trail?
I would say we're beginners.
We're definitely beginners, but you know, there are some minimalist runners that they just show up in a pair of 5K shorts and a swallow of water in their cheek, and they say, "I'm ready for 20."
I would say we're adaptive, and I would say that I've been in studios with more gear.
and you've also been in with less.
Yes, I have. Because MP3 recorder.
In your hand, right? Yeah. So we really have no particular topic. And so I might send this over to you, Scott, just to get some comments.
To come up with a topic?
No. To comment on this one.
Okay,
races,
I'm ready.
Races are expensive.
They are.
Man, budgets. I tell you, my race budget is growing. So I commit to a race, and with no secrets, I'm fortunate enough to get into Western States.
Yes.
At $370, right?
It's expensive.
But that only is the beginning.
It is. Because you need shoes. Well, you need gear.
Let's not even go to
you
the
need
gear
hotel
side.
Room. You need transportation. And you live here. But
yeah,
you still
right.
have to like get a hotel room and that sort of stuff.
And so... You're right.
We're talking thousands and thousands of U.S. dollars.
Well, I don't stay in that nice of a hotel, Scott. But I will tell you that that's not the only race, right?
So can I tell you how Jeff Rose does it?
Yeah.
He sleeps in a tent. Should man up, Don.
You know, I have a tent. So races, $370 for the race, right?
Expensive.
But we've established that. Now, I've got to put some races in front of that. And when I say I, we're not talking about me. We're talking, put you. Anytime I say I, put you... If we have anybody who listens to this, put you in that position because you're doing the same thing. So we've got to find a few, you know, B races and build up. Maybe B stands for build up races, right? I don't know. But we put those races in place, and those cost $140 for one of them, and $65 for another one, and
$200 for another.
And
yep.
And we talk about, well, can't you just go out and do it on your own? Can't you just? There is something about putting on a bib that brings out a different intensity. Have you found that, Scott?
Absolutely. And you have to, as much as you train on your own, you have to replicate the intensity of a race. You know, the starting line with all the people, you know, mm-hmm. you may not get that going out at 5 o'clock in the morning, getting out of your car and starting to run. You're not going to have that same adrenaline rush.
Right. You know, that's a good point. There's a couple of things, and I can usually only juggle two thoughts, so let me try with this one. First, just the anticipation the night before, right? Running on sleep that
yes.
maybe isn't just as sound as a training run. Practicing sleep before races, there's an art to that.
There is.
Right? So you make sure you get good sleep on Thursday because Friday night sleep's going to be and then Saturday you're racing. So... practicing what it takes to put yourself in a good spot sleep-wise is something you can do on your build-up races.
You know, and I think it's also important to practice running a trail with a lot of people. You know, typically on a training run, maybe if you're running with a group of 20, 30 people, you can practice it, but...
So what are you talking about, Scott? You're afraid you're going to trip over them?
No,
practice piece?
No, I mean, you know, the whole idea of... You know, getting in a Congo line on a single track trail and having 10 people in front of you and you want to go faster than they do, or vice versa. You have 10 people behind you that want to go faster than you, and you need to... I mean,
how to negotiate the Congo line.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. I apologize for jumping on you about that.
That's okay. That's I think, one of the advantages of doing a B or C race
yeah.
in preparation for your A race is there's just so many things that you need to practice.
If you get too close to the front to start off, you may get pulled into a race and start too fast, even if you didn't want to. You've talked about running with the mayor. That came from Warren Poole.
Yes.
Of getting in the back and making sure that bringing up the rear.
Running my own race.
You don't have to worry about a conga line at that point.
Right.
You just worry about the caboose, right?
Yep.
And making sure there's enough goo and material left for you at the aid stations, because you're the last guy. Last of the pickings, right?
Yep.
So you have to ask the aid station workers for the secret stash.
So what was your point in this? That it's expensive?
No, we're just talking.
Oh, okay.
This is stuff. We talk about just like being on a trail run. This is the kind of, you know.
So we moved on. We moved on from the cost to some other.
Yeah, just random idea. Stuff. We may go back to cost.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. So you talked about, we talked about sleep, practicing sleep the night before. And we talked about running intensity when a bib's on, completely different, right? But I think there's also different hormones that are released. There's different, you know, whether it's cortisol, whether it's adrenaline, you know, and a number of other ones that I can't identify right now, that are present on race day.
Pheromones?
In some cases, Scott. you know, heart rate's different. There's a lot of things that are different that happen on race day. I don't know about you, and I'm going to throw this at you, and you can tell me because there's nobody else in here to ask, and we don't have a guest.
I'm the default? Is that all I am?
I'd ask you anyway.
Okay.
So, have you noticed that your heart rate's a little bit higher for the first, you know, say 5 miles of a race? You're running at a pace that you know would be X heart rate, mm-hmm. if you ever, you know, monitor your heart rate. But you notice on race day, it's a little bit elevated, a little bit higher. It's like, how come I'm about 10 points higher, yet I'm going the pace that it shouldn't be that high? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I think that has to do with those
adrenaline and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So when that happens,
you have to know how to manage that. That's why I think it's so important to go out slower than what you typically would do on a training run, so you can try to mitigate that higher heart rate.
Well, I don't think you can practice it on training runs. I think you have to be in the race to recognize it and know that you even have to back off more. And I think you digest a little bit different. I think a lot of things, the metabolism is changed. If that one indicator that the heart rate is elevated, I'll bet you all kinds of other things are jacked up and off as well. And so we need to practice and negotiate that little issue, and you can't do it just with the training run. So pony up, get yourself in some races, and practice race day stuff.
And I think that the other thing on a race day, at least for me, is as much as I want to, on a B race, take it easy and and use this as a training day with aid stations.
Yeah.
I find myself racing, meaning pushing myself a little bit harder than what I would normally do in a training run.
Yeah.
And I think that's good too.
Even though we tell ourselves this is just, it takes some of the pressure off, right? That it's just kind of a convenient long run that's supported where you don't have to worry about it.
But my point is even though you try to say that to yourself, you still go out there and you want to perform at your very best. You know, if I'm on a training run and it's not particularly a good day, I may cut it short. But on a race day, even if it's a B race.
You've never cut a training run short.
No, I never.
Because they're out and backs or something, or a loop. It's like,
well, sometimes I'll take a shorter loop. I could turn around quicker.
Do you feel like if that, and I've done that, and I tell you, I feel some of my most difficult times, I just beat myself up if I cut it short. I feel like I failed it.
You know, I don't have a problem with it because
you're smarter than I am.
I read Lance Armstrong's book.
Yeah, what'd he say?
Where he talks about
we
don't know what he says and what's truth anymore.
Ooh,
that's harsh.
That's all right.
This
is edit free. I'm sorry, I can't take that out.
Well, you know what? You make your bed. You sleep in the bed you make, right? I have no idea what I was talking about.
you were talking about not feeling bad about cutting it short.
We were talking on the trail the other day. We were talking about Brad Kearns, who used to, you know, train with a lot of these athletes, and they said that, you know, you have to listen to your body. And sometimes when they're training with these elite cyclists, if one of the training buddies wasn't having a good day, they'd say, I'm out, and they turn around and go home.
And they wouldn't give any guff about it. It was just, you're listening to your body, and that's what you need to do. And you have to have enough maturity to say, this is what's right for me now.
Yeah.
All right.
But you don't do that on a race day, even if it's a B race. You don't go out. Well, maybe some people do. I don't think I've ever done it where I've gone out and gone, you know what, this day sucks. I've done that before.
Yeah.
But I've never said, you know what, I'm going to only go 40K of this 50K race.
Let's talk about some of those actual things that happen on a race where you can get caught up. If you didn't have enough B races to learn how to negotiate some of this stuff, you get caught up with some just cool people, loving the conversation, but you know you've got a voice inside your head that says, you are going way too fast and this is beyond your ability to hold this. But you're having such a great time and you're meeting new people. And
I do that on training days.
that it's good to make those mistakes on your B races, you know, when you're, and I think that changes all the time. You know, year to year, you could say, well, heck, I've got a number. Well, let's look at Mike Hernandez when he's been on the podcast, yeah. 136 races, but a new season for him is still important for him to feel what he has and what vehicle is the 2013 vehicle and how this is acting and maybe this new fuel or whatever he's doing. There's still things to practice and tweak along the way. So no matter how much experience, I think we constantly need to read and practice. And that's what the build-up races are about. B races, Scott, build-up.
Oh, that's right. Starts for, okay, got it. Thanks for reminding me again.
Yeah, sorry. So practice racing, very important. The sleeping the night before, just different.
Do you have trouble sleeping the night before a big race?
Well, yes, because I have to pin my bib onto my shorts. That takes some time.
You sleep in your shorts?
No, okay. But I do lay them out.
You know, I'm trying to think. I can't think of any race that I've run where I haven't slept the night before. I've heard a lot of people say that they just don't get a good night's rest.
Yeah.
The night before, and I'm blessed. I'm a sleeper.
I woke you up 5 minutes ago.
it's not a problem. Although I do prescribe to Thursday night going to bed
big time sleep
ultra early.
Yeah.
And getting just a really good night's sleep. And sometimes I'll have trouble, you know, I'm anxious right before I go to bed, but once I hit the pillow, I'm out. So I don't have that problem.
I you know, it's not uncommon. Somehow, I don't know. I mess around until 11 o'clock somehow.
How, on a race why? Night?
Yeah, I don't mean to, but there's just little odds and ends. It's like drop bags. Like, who would have thought you needed a drop bag? and then you've got to put your name on them.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you have a checklist?
No. That would take some of the fun out of it.
Don't say that. I think that there's a lot of people that have checklists. And in fact, I have done it both ways where I've had a checklist. I think it's important.
You know how long it would take me to make a checklist? That would just be another task. I'd have to make the checklist and then fill it out.
You could do a checklist today for your Western States run in June.
Yeah, the conditions might change by then. It might be different gear. So, you don't know what's going to happen.
You're a last minute guy, aren't you?
You know, I like to wing it. I just like the turmoil and the chaos that surrounds it.
But you do lay stuff out the night before. You don't do it that morning?
Oh, no, that would be too crazy because I expect to oversleep. And I and I need to be like ready to roll. That's I have funny. Stories about that.
I wonder if there's anybody out there that actually sleeps in their running gear. So that all they need to do is get out of bed,
you know,
put
what?
On their shoes and go.
I've thought about it, but I don't want to make my running gear tired. I want it to be fresh and ready. I don't want to put an extra 4 or 5 hours on it.
Kind of sweaty and smelly.
Yeah, I want to, you know, I want to, do you change shirts or anything during a race, during a, like, you know, 50 or over race?
Never.
Not 50 miles, but definitely.
Even on 100, I didn't. No.
You didn't?
Nope.
Oh, I absolutely, when it gets dark, you know, that's the time.
I put sleeves on.
I let you, you got to change your shorts. I keep, but I felt good changing the shirt. I felt, it gave me a little extra.
That's interesting. I haven't done it.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of nice to put, I've done shoes. I've done different shoes and I've stayed in shoes. I don't know if I have always had shoes waiting for me somewhere and a different brand, different model, something that strikes me different. And I imagine that two shoes, even from the same factory, probably strike you a little bit different. But I've always had a different manufactured shoe, just half psychological and half hoping that it doesn't have the same wear spot on my foot.
Mm.
But I'm lucky on feet. I'm a lucky foot guy. And knock it on wood, that you know, I don't get struck by the foot demon.
So here's another question. Have you ever, this last race that I did, I camped out. I actually camped versus staying in a hotel. And
a la Jeff Rose style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it...
did you get good rest?
You know, I did. I fell asleep.
Although it was extra early, right?
It was a busy campground. There were a lot of people up that late that night,
yeah,
which didn't bother me a whole lot. But I have to say that I probably would have slept better in a bed. Even if it was a hotel bed, I probably would have slept better. So that's something I don't know whether I'll ever do again, depending on how much the race is and how much I can afford for a hotel.
Well, I mean, even if you can't afford it, it sometimes feels good not to just frivolously throw cash around.
Do you think anybody's going to listen to this?
No, I'm not even listening to it. So.
You'll edit that out, right?
No. Keeping it all in. There might be a nugget somewhere in here. If you took all of our words and scrambled them and then put them together in different sequence, you could probably get a decent thought.
Or write a poem.
Okay. So where else are we going with just random race day topics / training topics?
I will tell you.
All right.
This last Saturday, I joined one of our guests that's been on the show before, John Nichols.
Yes.
And his running group. He prescribes, if you haven't listened to his podcast, go back. It was one of the first ones we did. And he is self-proclaimed as he over-trains and then over-tapers as he runs in and gets up to his A races. And we went out, and it's the first time I've done this, where we ran loops. So it was a 6.5 mile loop up in the mountains, most of it on Western States Trail route. And it was actually really fun. I wasn't sure how much I'd like just doing the same loop over and over, but I really enjoyed it. Had some good terrain, had some good downhill, some good uphill, a lot of flat running in between. And it was nice because you didn't have to, you know, load up your pack or have a hydration vest or, you know, all this stuff. You could leave most of your gear in one spot, and every 6.5 miles had your own little aid station. It's very fun. Never done that before. Have you ever done that?
Oh, I've run loops, but I want to run the one you're talking about because I like the way, I like that distance. That's a good,
yeah.
You know, what did you say, 6?
6.5.
6.5, yeah.
Or maybe it's 6.7.
So much time is spent. We've got a good local training hill around here, and last year I ran some repeats on that and made kind of a little loop around that, mm-hmm. just because going out to the canyons for us requires about a, 35-40 minute trip, and you put two of those on each side, and start to be some time consuming.
Yeah.
So I think you can get by on some local hill and just go to work, plug in and go.
Yeah.
What do you think about night running, working all day and heading out? And
we've talked about that a little bit and on some previous podcasts. I think you were the one who brought it up, and I thought it was ingenious.
Oh, it was necessity.
Now there are a lot of people out there that do night runs. I talked to somebody on this last training run I did on Saturday. He said, you know what? I cannot get up in the morning before work and go run. And he said, that's just, I can't do it. So he says he does all of his running at night. So he's used to working all day, being on his feet, and then going out and doing his training at night.
Do you think you're a better, a stronger morning runner or a stronger, is it easier? Let me rephrase that. Forget that question.
Okay.
Do you think you're better in the morning or in the evening?
Definitely morning.
The chances of you getting out and doing it, definitely morning?
I'm a morning guy.
How about performance-wise?
Morning. How about you?
It's probably morning. That's probably why we all go in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, you're well-rested. You've laid down and you get up and ready to go.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, I want to talk to you about your Saturday run. Actually, you've done a couple runs with our good friend Lee McKinley.
Yes, sir.
Who is a phenomenal athlete. In fact, he has gotten faster as he's aged.
You know, he ran, what was it? Clarksburg, a 20-mile run that he runs every year, and he has for over a decade. And he was 3 minutes faster at age 51, I believe, 3 minutes faster this year than he's ever been.
Yeah, that's amazing.
He's just,
so I've tried to run with you guys, and it's just, I can't hang. You know, maybe for 4 miles, I'm done.
You don't know that I bail at 5, right? You
no,
assume that I
do. I assume you do the
enchilada.
Whole thing. But this last Saturday, you went and ran again with Lee, and I remember the text I got from you: "Run is over, ouch!" Exclamation point. So talk to me about that run. What?
Well, you know, I ran with him the week before, and you know, he challenged me, of course, and this week I realized he was being kind to me because he opened it up even more, and all he did was.
Oh, you mean he was being kind the first week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was even more of a separation on a long, long climb up a hill, and he's just in great shape, and power to weight ratio,
that's important, isn't it?
So important. It's like I have a full size pickup truck and a 4-cylinder engine that needs to be tuned up, and he is rocking the
V12 and a Prius.
That's exactly what he's doing. He doesn't have a lot of weight he's pulling around.
Right.
You know, and so I tell myself and remind myself of that, but it doesn't do anything for our separation. So I know that power to weight ratio is critical. You know, he said he became a better climber when he started cycling.
Yeah.
When he got on the bike and he started to improve his quadriceps strength, he said climbing improved for him.
Well, here's my question. When take this Saturday's run that you did with him. Is he running at like 70% effort? I mean, is he going out and doing a tempo run? Do you think that was a tempo run for him?
No, he worked. We were both tired at the end, and he worked hard. And I could tell. I've run with Lee for, you know, a lot of years. I know that you know he benefited from the run, and he is not the type of athlete that will take a Saturday and just throw it away. He may be one out of maybe the one that he paces me on coming up in a few months, but he'd throw that out. But he wants to make sure he gets a good workout in because that's important. It's part of his agenda and his build phase. Well, so he's working.
Well, and I think that's the million-dollar question. Our guest that we were going to talk to today says that training at a slow rate or a slow pace will make you faster. So my question is, do you have to go out and really work it like that to get benefit? Can you go out and do, you know, a 60, 70% effort and find benefit, time on your feet?
Right. You know, I think there's, you know, this is my opinion, right?
It's all our opinion. There's nothing that's documented or tested except for personal testing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that, you know, like we're going to hear from Brad Kearns in an upcoming podcast, looking forward to talking to him. He talks about building a huge base, you know, build your aerobic base and go race it on Saturday. And that doesn't mean every Saturday, right? I mean, you go out there for whatever the build phase, whether it's 2 or 3 months and do that slow, steady work that you're talking about, build that cardiovascular machine and that metabolic efficiency machine, and then go out there and put it to work. So with that said, what am I going to say? I think it's good. I think there's great benefit in going out and pushing like I had to with Lee. I think that if you want to run faster and improve your time, you have to go out and push that, you know, that aerobic base that you've built. I think there's times you just have to go out there and breathe hard, work hard, and make it hurt a little bit.
I think your key word in that phrase was sometimes. You don't do that every Saturday.
Oh, no. I don't think I, you know, but what's happening is it takes, as Lee said, as he mentioned, you need a few of these to whip your body back into shape, to reawaken some of that base that you do already have. The old muscle memory thing, right? You go to a gym and you get somebody that's never worked out, and they can work out for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and all they get maybe is better form. You end up with somebody that's been there, done that before, and 4 to 6 weeks later, you think, what happened? The guy went up a shirt size. He became more because of that muscle memory. And I think the same happens with us as runners, that you get out there and push a little bit, and all the body says, oh, yeah, at the cellular level, oh, yeah, we've got to start, you know, getting these glycogen stores back. We've got to turn these engines back on for these all these mitochondria that are in the cells that are the engine. We got to recruit and reawaken these areas.
Well, and I also think that it kind of gives yourself a mental awakening where you go, you know what? There's more out there for me. I there's still improvement for me to do. Mm-hmm. That's what I get when I run with Lee. After 4 miles, I just go, holy crap, this guy is like 6 years my senior, and I want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me think, okay, and a little bit of a motivation.
Yeah, so. Yeah, he's a smart trainer. We've talked to him before about recognizing how important cross training is for him, and you know, doing the cross between cycling and swimming. He does a master swim program, and he goes out and rides as many hours as he runs, and that way he keeps runs fresh, and he loves doing them. And so I run with him on the Saturday, and then on Sunday he's out there riding his bike. Mm. And you want to talk power to weight ratio? It's tough to stand in front of your refrigerator when you're on the bike.
Mm.
Write that one down, Scott.
Maybe you need to tweet that.
I don't think it would get too far. All right, Scott.
Yeah.
Next topic.
Yeah.
And it's we read an article recently about sleep, about
yes,
about how there are three things that all trail runners, or excuse me, all athletes should monitor. One is their training, two, nutrition, and three, you want to guess what it is, Scott?
Sleep.
Yeah, that's what it is. Sleep.
You know, and in fact, I will link that article that we read.
Mm-hmm.
It was by Dr. Sherry Ma, and she has been doing a lot of research on sleep and how that benefits athletic performance. And she did some studies with the Stanford basketball team, I believe.
Right.
And it's amazing.
So the Stanford basketball team, they said they did the swim team, the basketball team, and a few other sets of athletes out there at
chess team.
No, not the chess team. So the theory was that if you're sleep deprived, your performance goes down. And so she put the spin on it. If your sleep is up, does your performance go up? And so they had the athletes sleep at a minimum of 10 hours per night.
That's a lot of sleep.
Now, typically, she says, or the article cites, that athletes sleep, these young athletes sleep from 5 to 7 hours, and they're working, they're training, they're going to school, they're trying to balance social life and everything. So 5 to 7 is what they're grabbing. So they said, new rule is 10 hours. And so they did this over a certain period of time. Look at the article. It'll tell you what it is. I forget, you know, first couple of weeks, and then they did it for maybe, I don't know how many more weeks. Embarrassed that I don't know. But here's what they found out. That the basketball team, their three-point percentage improved by 9%.
That's huge.
And that their three-point, right? And
you said free throw, didn't you?
Free throw?
Yeah.
Yeah, 9.3%. So, respectively, 9% improved shooting as a result of sleep, and that's it. The swimmers reported that they too had some of their personal best swims during this period of sleep. So they hypothesized that the body releases human growth hormone during the sleep process, and if you're not sleeping, you can't release it, and this is an anabolic hormone for bone growth and muscle repair and bone repair, things that we're using out there. And if you want a legal dose of HGH, something made by your own body right there for recovery, sleep is the answer. So I'm going to focus a bit more on sleep, Scott.
So if I can sleep 12 hours a night, do you think I'd be able to do a sub 2400 miler?
No, you would have to sleep for 24 hours and dream about it the entire that would get you there.
That's funny.
So,
thanks. It also makes me think.
So the U.S. Olympic team, it says this in the article, so I encourage you to go read it so you can site check, fact check me on all this stuff, because you know it's only, I read it, what, 4 or 5 days ago, Scott? And
you're probably making some of it up, but it's don't loosely let interpreted stand in this way of a good story.
So the U.S. Olympic team, they went and brought in comfortable mattresses, they blacked out the curtains and dropped the temperature in the room, and put in some good alarm clocks.
You know, I read that. Why did they drop the temperature in the room?
Don't you sleep better when it's kind of chilly, you know?
Well,
so do they.
Okay.
They're human like you.
I'm from Wyoming. Yeah. I like the cold.
Yeah, so I think we all sleep better when we can, you know, pull up that blanket around our ear and go to sleep. I don't know why. You don't sleep well when it's hot. That's for sure. So, sleep, I'm going to focus on sleep. And I know that that's critical. I know that when I start putting in higher miles just out of necessity, I end up sleeping more just because I have to. So, but I think if I try to emphasize that, juggling those three, training, nutrition, and sleep, and I'm aware of all three of them, I think that that would be important, even sacrificing a run if necessary to keep sleep in the balance. Because for me, the goal is to travel A to B, the distance that we're doing, with the most efficient body that I have, the healthiest body that I have, and an overtrained body is and without rest is not strong.
I agree.
So now, on that topic with the human growth hormone stuff, mm-hmm. we always talk about how people that run or exercise, whether they're hikers or canoers, whatever it is, people that are into fitness, and we focus on trail running people, and you can look at those around you that are a decade or two older than you, but they're not any different as far as they're full of energy. They look youthful. They act youthful. Their conversation is youthful. In fact, if you go out to a run into a group, you don't separate and draw circles around people in different age groups or the job categories that you work in. This is the professional group. Here's the blue collar. We don't do that. We really draw circles around, if we draw them at all, one big circle around us, right? But the smaller circles, more on abilities.
I gravitate to the babes.
You're running up front, so you know you'll kind of hang with those guys, and then you're in the so that we can all run together. But it has nothing to do with age, and that's what I think is cool about part of this HGH observation, is that something's keeping these people young. Something's making them act young, look young, feel young, and I think we're driving this hormone or keeping it present because we put a demand on it out on the trail, that we are climbing hills and we're asking our body to work. We're tearing it down, so we're making the body rebuild itself. And as a result, the body responds to the stress you put on it. If you work your muscles, they get stronger. If you're working your, you know, anabolic system and you need to rebuild, your body's going to recruit those hormones and it's going to stay present. You're not going to wilt and wither like an old person with soft skin that sags underneath their eyes.
Okay, so here's the question.
And their muscles atrophy and become soft like your pillow. You stay lean. Okay.
I know that Phil Maffetone in his book talks about or states that age has, I'm paraphrasing. In fact, I'm probably making it up, that age really doesn't have any bearing on performance. Now, I would have to disagree, because you look at, you know, elite athletes, you know, regardless of the sport, and as you grow older, you know, your performance does decrease. Now, we've seen it in ultra running, where, you know, people in their 70s and 80s can go out and perform and finish these races. My question is that a function of an aging body not being able to repair itself as efficiently and in the same time frame? Do you understand my question? You're looking at me like I'm green.
Draw pictures in the sky for me.
So you have this guy that's 32 years old.
Right.
That is a moderately good athlete.
All right.
And you have a moderately good 60-year-old.
Okay.
You send them out on the training run, same body type, same build, same weight, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're training for the same race. Who will perform better? Because of training, will the younger person, does that HGH that is released during sleep and during recovery, does that happen quicker and more efficiently and better than it does at age 60?
Well, yeah, everything is turned down, right? The volume begins turning down, and you know, you can look at studies and see that cardiovascular efficiency starts to decrease at whatever age, I forget, you know, it's in the 40s, but it's a slow decrease. That the line doesn't drop off like a cliff. It's a very, very slow bend of that line, which is encouraging, and I grab onto that fact and say you don't lose that much each year.
You know, we talked about that, and it's in Chris McDougall's Born to Run,
yeah,
where it talks about, you know, you would think that it goes up to a certain point and then it's the same parabolic shape and drops the same, but it actually drops at a much slower rate.
Right. So, to your question about
that, makes me feel good since I'm on the decline.
you know, you talk about the 30 and the 60-year-old. The guy that's going to win it is the guy that is trained well, the guy that has experience, the guy that negotiates the run well. And you can't line up anybody within their age category. You know, experience is huge. I've been beaten by plenty of people 60 and older.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, for our sport specifically, there's a lot more experience plays a very large role in successfully navigating an ultra race, mm-hmm. knowing what to do when you run into hurdles like upset stomach. What do you do with blisters? What do you do
cramps.
When you get into a bonk? You know, experience plays a huge part in that.
Blisters. Did you say blisters?
No, you did.
Yeah. I want to remind you of that. What else goes wrong on a trail? There's plenty, but let's back to the HGH thing and the group and the people. I had a chance last year to run with a gentleman named Wally. He's 77 and mm-hmm. completed a 100-mile run. I brought him up before, at least on a trail run with you and I.
Yep.
And Wally is as young, youthful, excited, motivated as anybody else out there, regardless of their age. He was just another runner. 77, Scott, running 100 miles.
Did he look 77?
No, he didn't act 77. You wouldn't say act your age.
Does that mean that a bunch of ultra runners are immature? I'm joking.
No. I would
tell me how old you thought he was when you saw him.
Oh, you know what? I'm afraid to even really venture into any of that because you never know. I would say you look at an ultra runner that has some time on their feet and you just better automatically subtract 10 years. I mean, that's a general rule of thumb. If you're thinking, you add 10.
So I know what you meant.
Thanks. There's a 10-year
cushion.
Thank you.
10-year benefit to ultra running.
At least. Not a scientific study. You can quote this podcast on it if you'd like.
You can cite the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not peer-reviewed. Not a lot of people would probably take it for what...
Do you have notes?
No. These are notes for our guest that somehow I dropped the ball on. Scott, how did that happen?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't have a whole lot more. Do you have any other stuff? Think hard. I mean, because you probably have something rattling
around.
I'll
ask you a question.
Go.
This week when we ran, you were wearing your Hokas.
I did. Yeah, but I have not been in the Hoka for quite some time, at least a month to 6 weeks, right?
Yeah. That was an interesting turn of events. I thought that the Hokas were going to be lawn mowing shoes.
No.
Or reaching the top shelf in the cupboard shoes.
No. I think there's a time and a place for the Hoka. And I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the Hoka at Angeles Crest, that in the miles that for me, in the 70-ish miles, my bottom of my feet sometimes just feel like they're getting hammered. Mm-hmm. That's just me. We're all different. But I was in the Hoka and I didn't have that. That's something I could not find a complaint about, like the bottom of my feet hurt. I had to look for something else. Mm-hmm. But the bottom of my feet could not be on the top of the list, which they have been often. So I will reserve that shoe and I will throw them in the mix. You know, a once a week Hoka runner, I could do that.
So once again, moderation is a good thing. To go extreme in one direction may not be healthy.
And variety. I like it. It's kind of fun to get in there and do something different, right?
Sure.
We're better with guests, Scott.
We are much better.
Yeah, because we don't have a lot. It really exposes us.
You know, this
has been a week long that we've been doing this.
If this was a trail run, this would be the time when we have, you know, I need to pee. Where it's a lull in the conversation and you take advantage of it, you have a goo, or you take a swig of, and then we start down in another topic.
This is the day I'm going to create the edit podcast because I don't know where that came from. What was that? You want me to really keep that in, Scott?
No.
What did that even mean?
No.
Okay. All right. So I think we pretty much hit some general topics that I think needed to be addressed. I think they have been hanging out there for a while and needed to be corralled. How's your Coca-Pelli, Scott?
You know what? This is a good topic. Over the holidays, I had forgotten about the Coca-Pelli, and I had not been wearing the Coca-Pelli.
Scott, this now if there was ever an edit, this is it.
Okay, take it out.
No, go ahead. Tell your story.
No, I was just going to say I did not have very great runs and feeling kind of sorry for myself. Putting the Cocapelli on, I think I'm back on the right track, if you will. Got to wear the Cocapelli.
Well, I think it's important. I enjoy it. It's fun. And I think that's all we have, Scott. All right, Scott, let's wrap this thing up.
I'm ready.
Is there anything else you want to comment on, like the direction that we're going with Trail Runner Nation's future guests we have coming up?
No.
Okay. You want to talk maybe the gratitude we have for folks purchasing Trail Runner Nation shirts, the arm sleeves, literally the donation that they have made to redwhiteandblue.org?
You know, we are grateful, but no.
Okay. The Cocapelli, the availability online for,
you can
10 Cocapellis for $5 include shipping. You want to talk about that?
Nope.
Do you have any desire to really talk about liking us on Facebook?
No.
Because we have a presence here?
No.
That where we are Nation on Twitter and come up with some clever things occasionally that we steal from other and retweet from others?
Plagiarism is, a form of,
flattery.
Brilliance.
You want to talk about that?
No.
Any upcoming gear reviews that you have planned that you want to let people know about?
No.
Well, I guess that pretty much wraps up.
I want to go run.
Moss.
Yeah.